We have a very fascinating shiur today where the halacha is more predominant than the machshava. Very fascinating. But first, I just want to briefly review last week. Essentially what we said last week was that Purim, you see, when you talk about the Shlosh Regalim, everything that happened on the Shlosh Regalim remained permanent. And it changed the entire destiny of the Jewish people, whether it takes Pesach and the physical freedom, or Shavuot and the spiritual freedom, Matan Torah, or Sukkot and the Anane HaKavod, Eretz Yisrael. Don't sit so far back. Everything that happened remained permanent. And that's why the Torah could introduce a concept of Simcha. And Simcha means, and as the Rebbe explained, you see, Simcha, as the Torah understood it, is not an outward manifestation. It's an integral part of our very inner gestalt. And when it comes to Simcha, the Jew, you can have a moment of depression, you can have a moment you're upset, but the basic gestalt of the Samachta Bachagecha is the spiritual joy, this spiritual surrender, the spiritual meaning to life. And this is why you can have Hallel and you can have Simcha and everything that goes with Shlosh Regalim and with Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur as well. When it comes to Megillat Esther, the Rav said something amazing. And it's, of course, it's please come close. I don't sit so far away. I've been teaching. It's not only that I'm teaching, but all the other books I published, once the book was published, no one bothered me. Since the Rav has been published, I have to allow about an hour a day just to handle the faxes and the correspondence and the telephone calls. It's unbelievable. Jack, the fellow handling the president of YU alumni wants to get an email when you print out yesterday's what I said about the prayer group, you know, about halacha. You're going to put that into... okay, so here, he wants you to add him to the email when you do something of my Torah. And here, this is the women's thing. If you can put that into the email, I don't know how it works, but if you can, you know, what do they call it? What's the word they use? Scan it in. You know, so maybe they have it here. They can help you here, the office here. Because let them see what it's based upon, because I'm getting reactions all over. Rabbi Miller just spoke with me this morning, etc. And a lot of people are happy that I opened my mouth on it, because it seems once I open my mouth, chavre-chavre-slay. I caught Marvin the Shtiblach last night, so someone met me there already and told me, you know, a big shot here from the YU alumni. He also heard that I let off a little steam in Midrashot Maria that morning. Anyway, coming back here. So, but Purim, what the Rebbe said on Purim, you see, everything is reversible. When you live in the Gola, nothing is permanent. And this is the reality of the Gola, and this is why Akatei Avdei Achashverot Anan. And the Rav, Kedako B'Kodesh, if you read the Megillah, you read the sentences, you see Mordechai and Esther, and what happens after the Megillah, we spoke about this a few years ago, but the overall attitude is, in the Gola, a Jew can never have total peace of mind. We can avoid tragedy today, who knows what will come tomorrow. It reminds me of one of the questions that Rabbi Frank Mushri got during the Holocaust, and we'll deal with it in a number of years from now. God should spare us. But Rabbi Frank Mushri, you all know, was the probably thousands of questions raised in the Holocaust, but who survived to tell the tale? Rabbi Frank Mushri survived the Kovna Ghetto. He came to the Bronx, I remember him when he first arrived. As far as I know, he still may be alive. I don't know. He must be a man in his 90s today. How do you know? Yeah, but he was up in the Bronx already. He's still in the Lower East Side. That's his son in the Bronx. He still remains on the Lower East Side? Yeah, could be. Fabulous. I'm very happy to hear that. That Tzitzel Ezra, I know, is alive. No, Tzitzel Ezra is alive, but he hasn't, in years we haven't heard from him. But the Rafai Mushri has to be a man in his 90s today, because he arrived in America after World War II. At that point already, he was in his 40s. And Rafai Mushri published, I believe, five volumes, Shelet Teshuvot Min HaMa'amakim. And the questions that were asked of him are just overwhelming. But one of the questions was, there was just a selection in the ghetto. And this person survived. This person was not selected. And right away he turned to Rav Chaim Mashri, "Do I have to make a Birchat Tagoimo?" So Rav Chaim Mashri answered so beautifully. He said, "Yes, it's true that Adalet Tzrichim Lehodot Tegemar in Brachot, and certainly coming out of danger, surviving a selection." But he said, "The danger is not over." In other words, we come out of the hospital, so a fool is going to say, "Well, I had my open heart surgery, I'm going to live forever now." All right, you survived the open heart surgery, you have to make a birchat hodah, you have to make a birchat hagoymel, no question about it. But you know you're going to die, but the point is that right now the immediate danger is over. Rav Ephraim Mashri answered him that when you're in the ghetto, the immediate danger is not over. In 2 weeks' time, there'll be another selection, or 3 weeks' time, and how do you know you won't be sent away to a death camp? So it's a very potent answer, and it's a very proper answer. But coming back to what the Rav said, this is the Gola. You might want to make a case that when Esther and Mordechai were saved, so they made a Birchat HaGoymel. But true, it's a little better than the concentration camp. Another 2 weeks later, we don't imagine Mordechai is going to be thrown out of power. But on the other hand, we never have security. And once you don't have that sense of security, you cannot institute a concept of simcha like on Jack, this is yours too. You cannot institute a concept of simcha like on Shilosh Regalim. Okay, and that's what the Rav said, and it's very true and very powerful, and it constantly comes back to haunt us when we talk about Eretz Yisrael and the Gola and the lack of Aliyah, and why the Rav became a Zionist and why he left Aguda. But all this ties together. It's a very, very deeper and more profound understanding of the Gola. As far as the question of why the Rav didn't go on Eliyahu, it's the obvious question that everyone asks when you hear such beautiful Divrei Torah. So, you see, that's a question like asking why someone has five children and not six children. That's not a real answer. Life and Hashgacha Pratit intermingle. And that's the way life is. You can want to come on Aliyah and it didn't work out, and when they want you to come on Aliyah and you're not willing to come on Aliyah, the human being is a complex individual. But nevertheless, the Rav must have been doing something right, because you can make a cheshbon, his leading students almost inevitably are found al Admat HaKodesh. You can make a cheshbon, I can tell you, name by name, it's not to do it now, but the overwhelming majority of his leading students all came an Aliyah. And you talk about his family, his grandchildren, so the Rav must have been doing something right. But nevertheless, this is the difference, and it's a profound difference, it's a striking difference, it's an inevitable difference, and the truth of the matter is, if I can go back to what I said yesterday, those of us who live in dual culture at times don't want to admit to this difference. But this is it, and this is Purim. See, Hanukkah already is a little bit different. Because Seth, what does the Gemara say about Hanukkah? Hanukkah happened in Eretz Yisrael. Once it happened in Eretz Yisrael, the results of Hanukkah are much more lasting. According to the Rav, where he quoted the history book, and he says that the Goyim should celebrate Hanukkah, Matt, I can't talk above anyone's voice, that the Goyim should celebrate Hanukkah, he's not off base. Not off base at all. That the victory of Hanukkah paved the way for monotheism, paved the way for the continuity of Judaism, what ultimately comes to Judeo-Christian heritage. So the impact is much more lasting. And even on a simpler level, remember the miracle of the Maccabim kept alive the Second Commonwealth, the Second Temple, kept alive independence in Eretz Yisrael how much more time would we say, for on to 200 years after the victory of the Maccabim, on to 150 years later. So there is something to be said that there was more permanent, that's why they can introduce Hallel. But nevertheless, even Hanukkah doesn't have the concept of simcha like the Shlosh Regalim. And that's the difference. Then the Rebbe was asked why he doesn't get drunk. And his answer, of course, was cute. And the truth of the matter is, I can tell you something. It comes to mind now. It's amazing how the human mind brings back memories. But I just want to reiterate, he referred to the Chayyadim. Those of you that know Brist, know Vilna, know the Chayyadim. He was a grocer in Vilna. He's a Gadol Hadar Chayyadim. Gadol Shevik Doilim, Avram Danzik. And the baked brisk was very much machsh of the Chayei Adam. And then the Chayei Adam paskens lahalacha, that if you know you can't hold your liquor, and it'll interfere with the rest of the day and your observance of the mitzvah of the day and your davening, then you're better, you shouldn't get drunk for chomas of Yehul Hashem Shemayim. And as far as I understand, the Rav used to do what all of us do, at least those of us that can't hold liquor, take a drop of liquor and try to take a nap, and that way you will makayim ad lo yada, because when you're asleep you don't know the difference. I'll tell you what did happen, and it was a very fascinating moment in my life. Again, when we studied for smicha, we were much younger than you. At the age of 23, but I was in the rabbinate. But might it be about 21, my good friend Shaya Balin, who I grew up with in the Bronx, was getting married. He came down to Stern College, met a girl who had come from Boston, and it was a big scandal because this girl was all of 19 and she gets engaged, and the parents held a meeting. And said, I mean, you can't believe this today. The parents held a meeting in Stern College. Our daughters are going to go to Stern College. They're going to meet these big shot New York kids, and they're going to fall for them, and who knows if they'll have good marriages. And they were so worried, does this girl know what she's doing? Anyway, to make a long story short, it's now 40 plus years later, and I understand they're still happily married. But the wedding, and they live in Boston, and the wedding was in Boston. Of course, the girl was in Boston. The girl was a Brookline girl. Had a flower shop there. So I remember the wedding was Shushan Purim, was Motzai Purim. So I told the story before. I went over. You know, a kid doesn't know how to learn yet. You know, I knew very little. I was supposedly a good kid. I was one of the top kids in the yeshiva, the top kids in the Rav Shia. But I have to say, I knew very little. I knew very little. So remember, we went over to Rebbe. You know, we're going to the wedding. And we have to leave New York, Penn Station. It was those days to travel New York to Boston. We were kids. We were poor kids. We go by train. So we have to leave at about 12 o'clock to get there in time for the wedding. When do we eat the Purim Suda? So the Rav said, what's the Shaila? You'll eat the Purim Suda in the morning. When do you think I eat the Purim Suda? You know, it was the Shita Tagon. We didn't know what he was telling us. We thought, wow, Rebbe is so makil. We can eat the Purim Suda in the morning. Until today, if I'm home for Purim, I eat my Purim Suda at noon. I don't eat it at night. Why? Because the Shita Tagon. And the Gon's very right. You eat your Purim Suda at night, and you're eating into the night. You're dead drunk. Where's there a heter to be drunk on after Purim is ended? Mendaf Lerenin. So the Gon used it Purim Suda at 10 o'clock in the morning, drank a drop, and by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he was totally back to his normal self. And the minute Purim ended, he was back to his normal schedule. So what we thought was a tremendous kula was in reality only minhag brisk, only minhag coming from the Vilna Gaon. But as a kid, we didn't understand it, and we were like, oh, Rebbe was matafres, we could eat the Purim Suda at 10 o'clock in the morning. We were so happy. Anyway, we come to Boston, we come to the hall, and we're New York kids. This is very exciting, very different for us. And Rebbe's Masada Kedushin, and under the chuppah, it's right after Purim, you know, it's Shushan Purim, everyone is in a Purim mood yet, and it's Balin getting married, this girl from Boston with the whole scandal, with everything that went on, and the women crying, that what's you know, imagine they were worried that in Stern College, the girls would get married too young. You know, compare it to today, where if you're not married by the time you're a senior, girls suffer. And I've given many girls idud, never to look around, never look to the left, now you have to do what's best for you. And everyone, I quote the many Maimah Chazal, the Gemara in Eruvim, Daf Yud Gimel Amid Bet, the Gemara in Yuvamah, Daf Kof Aleph Mamar Aleph, Al Tidchaki Yat Hasha'ah, it'll come to you. But anyway, so the Rav is Masada Kedushin, and we hear, Birchat Kedushin, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Shehakol Niyeh Bidvaro. And we didn't know what was going on, you know. We it was brandy. It was shahakol, and it was Masada Kedushin, and we didn't know what's going on. And we had such derech eretz for the Rav. It's not like in later years, in the 1970s, 50 guys would have run over. Rebbe, what happened? What happened? How come, you know, then we our tongues were out with fear to ask the Rav what happened. We found out what happened. There wasn't a bottle of wine that was unopened. That was still with a seal. And the hall was all goyim working there. And in those years, there was no yayin mavushal. It was regular yayin. So the Rav was worried if a bottle was open, the chances were that the goyim touched it, drank from it. You understand, the guy sees a bottle of wine, it's impossible that he shouldn't drink from it. So, but a bottle of brandy was Masada Kedushin. That's what we understood. But none of us had the guts to ask him. But one thing we did know, that he made a shakal correctly. You know, the wise guys were chayshish. Rebbe is drunk. Rebbe is flying in the air. Rebbe didn't realize what he was, what brach he was making. That much. We found out. Okay. Now, the Rav Nagel's into another topic. Fabulous topic. Why was this? And this topic has such inferences, if you're familiar with the Chatam Sofer and Medinat Yisrael and all the literature written on Yom HaTzmut, and should we be Chogeged? Shouldn't we be Chogeged? So the Rav asked, why was there such hesitation about establishing Chag HaPurim? Why did it require a second letter? I'm quoting the Megillah Perek Tet Pasuk Chav Tet Vatich Tov Esther Hamalka Bat Avichai Lomotcha Yudiyat Kol Tokev L'Kayem Et Ikeret Apurim Azot HaShenit. And Shenit, a second time. Why did she have to plead? Why did she have to knock on the door of the Chachamim? Why did she have to write a second letter? What was going on here? And the Rav said, when you look into the Gemara Megillah, we'll analyze the Gemara in a second. And this was the Rav. He takes a simple Gemara. All of us have learned Megillah. Megillah is a fairly easy Masechet, right? As kids, I think I was 13, 14. It may have been the first Masechet that I learned from cover to cover. So, you know, you take Megillah. There's a lot of Agada in there, which is good. I'm very angry when a Rebbe skips Agada. He's not doing a Talmud a favor. When I taught, I never skipped anything. Not Agada, not sex. When I taught a Shia and then a Daf in the Yeshiva in the 60s. And I was the only Rebbe. There were certain sugyas, the Chofetz Chaim's son-in-law came around to give him a book in my class. He was overwhelmed that I hadn't skipped in Pesachim. There's a whole story, and the kids did fabulous on that Bechina. And he was overwhelmed. But I always felt that a student should see the totality. If you skip, you're giving the kid a message, this is important, this isn't important. And if you skip something about sex, it's even worse. Because then the kid is going to learn it on his own. So instead of having a Rebbe that's teaching him the Kedusha V'Tara, the kid is going to learn it on his own and come out with perverted ideas. Instead of Torah ideas, he's going to have Hollywood ideas. And he's going to reach the conclusion that Rebbe skipped it because he was ashamed to teach it to us. But anyway, you learn Megillah, so we learned this, we learned that, Agada. You'll see what the Rav does with a few lines in the Gemara. There's enough to talk now for a full year. So the Rav says, you know why? There were two tremendous problems with instituting Purim. One problem was political. The other problem was religious. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, Shalach Esther L'Chachamim, Kivuni L'Dorot, Shachula, Kina At Moredet Aleinu Levein Ha'umat. Look what's happening. They were simply afraid, for political reasons, to establish Purim as a holiday. You know what they're talking about. Don't you have that today with Satma? Don't you have it today with Rav Avraham Yosef? Don't you have it today with those that follow Rav Shach's viewpoint? Although there it's less pronounced than Rav Avraham or with Satma. Kina. You're Moreit Kineged Umot. Megareit Umot. What do you need it for? What do you have to start off with the world? Why do you need enemies? They said to Esther, you're going to announce publicly you rejoice in the downfall of Haman? They were very frightened for political reasons. They were in the diaspora. They did not know how non-Jews would relate to the holiday of Purim. As a matter of fact, we had a lot of trouble on account of Purim. The Megillah itself has been distorted and misinterpreted by our enemies. The Megillah actually served as a document of Jewish cruelty and Jewish ruthlessness. If Jews were just given the opportunity time and again, the Gentiles said that. When anti-Semites wanted to say that the Jews act like Nazis, today they point out the fact that we bombed the metal factories around Cairo and that early civilians are killed. Now, you don't know what this is referring to. This is in the war of attrition between 1967 to 1973. There was a tremendous war of attrition. When we came in Aliyah, the war of attrition was on. It was a terrible period because every day boys were being killed at the canal. I remember one day, one Shabbos, 15 boys were killed at the canal, including one among them I knew. The two direct missiles hit two bunkers. In one bunker there were 8 boys, one bunker 7 boys, direct hit, wiped out in a minute on Shabbos. So Israel kept on retaliating. And in one of the tremendous raids, they bombed a metal factory in Cairo, a metal factory that was making parts for planes, etc. Obviously, when you bomb from the sky and you're bombing in Cairo, when the metal factories are built in the middle of residential areas, they killed about 80 civilians. The world went crazy. This is exactly what Russia was doing. Russia was carrying on a campaign against the Jews, fascists, Hitlers, Nazis, right after this. You got to remember, Russia then was the biggest supporter of Egypt and Syria. The campaign started with the bombing of the metal factory in Egypt. Before that, they would point out Megillat Esther. Jews, given opportunity in arms, can simply wipe out another race. They can commit genocide. This is exactly what they say now. This is one reason, the political reason. Shachula kina atmo redet lanu aleinu levein ha'umat. However, Esther answered, it is useless. You cannot suppress the story since our enemies know about it. Megillah, Zayin Omer Aleph. Esther answers, Shalchalahem, Kva katuvani al devrei hayamim lamalche modai uparas. Esther answered so beautifully, you can't hide it anymore. The New York Times has written about it. The Daily Znut has written about it. The International Herald Tribune has written about it. CNN has had reports on it. You can't hide it. So if they want to use the story to indict the Jews or to persecute them, they will do it anyway. So let us attend to our business. This is the proper attitude, the Rav said. If we say, Mayom Ru HaGoyim, it leads to nothing. Now, what does it mean, Mayom Ru HaGoyim? What is it based upon? You see, there's no actual Maimer Chazal, Mayom Ru HaGoyim. But I think you should all recognize that the Hilim Kuf Chavav Pasik Bet from Shir HaMalat, Oz Yom Ru HaGoyim, Hidil Hashem La'asot Meila. The Gemara says in Yoma, Daf Peivav Amar Aleph, Mayom Ru HaBriyot. So that's how it becomes the rabbinic aphorism, Mayom Ru HaGoyim. If you're going to worry about Mayom Ru HaGoyim, it will lead to nothing. And this is what Esther answered, B'kavod u'v'gaiva. And this is my own, I have to tell you, those of you who know my own political thinking, I always get upset when our politicians, our religious politicians, start down on our religious, or Rav Ovadia, the politician now, and his ilk, Mayom Ru HaGoyim. I don't give a hoot what the goyim will say. I lived through the Holocaust. I was alive. I was a kid yet, but I have memories. And I have researched certain parts of it. I published both in the Silver Era and now on the Rav, when the rabbis marched to Washington in 43, Erev Yom Kippur, Mayom Ru HaGoyim, the Goyim didn't get a hoot. Roosevelt didn't even have the courtesy to receive them. Remember, he sent Henry Wallace, the vice president, who had as much power as a dead tsetse fly in Mao Zedong's execution squad. And so this is Esther. She answers, the Rav here, beautiful. See, the Rav, again, it's so hard to characterize the Rav. So people want to paint him, he's a hawk, he's a dove. There was everything in him, labriyut. But here, there's no question, this is a hawkish point of view. This is Esther, this is the Megillah, this is what he answered. Beautiful. However, this is one problem. This is the minor problem. The political problem is the minor problem. There's a much more major problem. The problem which the Gemara alludes to as well. Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yudalet Amar Aleph, Tona Rabbanan. Our rabbis learned, Abayim Ushmonu Neviyim. V'sheven neviyot nitmabu lechem liYisrael, v'lo patchu, v'lo hitiru, al masha katuv b'Torah, chutz mimikra Megillah. Amazing. We had so many neviyim, so many neviyot, and no one added, no one subtracted from the Torah. The only thing that they added was Kriyat HaMegillah. It was a yontif which is added. The Yontif is not of Torah origin, but of rabbinic origin. There was Seth Kleinman, there was a very difficult question here. Lotasif. You recognize this? Seth, you've learned in Mir, you've learned in Bris, you mentioned to them you celebrate Yom Ha'atzmaut, they choked you and hanged you in effigy. And they wrote on your body, when the Arabs hanged someone in Damascus, they put a whole placard on his body, and in your body it said, this man advocated being over Lotosif by celebrating Yom Ha'atzmaut. It's a very, very serious problem. What's the thing about you? Yom Ha'atzmaut and what do you call it, and Bittul Torah, the same gematria, we'll figure out. But I'll ask you a different question. What about when you go out a demonstration against the police, against closing roads, for closing roads on Shabbos, and all these demonstrations take so much time, it's also Bittul Torah, so at times you have to be mevatel. And what about when you have to go to Mikveh Erev Yom Kippur? The Rav once wanted to say, share. I have it on tape. The Rav once wanted to share. He said to the class, and like he says, oh, tomorrow is Erev Yom Kippur, was next week is Erev Yom Kippur. He had to rearrange the shir. He says, for me it's not a problem. I don't go to Mikveh Erev Yom Kippur, he says. For you it's a problem, not for me. He was willing to say shir of Yom Kippur, but the guys have to go to Mikveh, so they're mevatel from Torah. You understand? Evidently in their brisket tradition, they didn't go to Mikveh. What can I tell you? Don't tell it to me, or don't tell it to my children. I have children go to Mikveh, not only every Erev Shabbos. It's a different ballpark with them. So it's a problem. Lo tosif. It was a religious problem. This is a real problem. So why Hanukkah? Why did Hanukkah go so smooth? Why don't we find out with Hanukkah? The same question was asked. The same battle was fought, and the Rav said so beautifully. Because when Hanukkah came along, they already had the precedent of Purim. They had no problem about Hanukkah. Hanukkah was only introduced because the problem of Purim was resolved in favor of the establishment of an additional holiday. But for Purim, there was a tremendous problem of Lotosif. This was the Pesach. He had a tremendous problem. And how did they do that? And the Gemara says, Megillah Daf Yudal Ramalaf, the Gemara continues, Madrush, what did they dash on? How did they know you can add on a Purim? Umami avdat lecheret amrinin shira mimita lachayim lekol shekain. Beautiful. What does it mean? Avdat lecheret. Paro. Paro didn't threaten the physical existence of the Jews. It was only a problem of spiritual survival. Paro let you live. Paro never wanted to exterminate the Jews. All he wanted was that the Jews should assimilate, and they were almost there totally. The Memtet Sharei Tuma. All of you knew what happened in Egypt. So, and then, if we're saved from spiritual destruction, when our bodies weren't threatened, and we say Shira, and we have Pesach, and we have such a tremendous chag in Zeichel Etziat Mitzrayim. If so, it is a fortiori, a kal v'choma. If meyavet l'cheirat derashira, then kol shekein mimita l'chayim. That's what the Gemara says. So you see, when it comes to Purim, there were two problems. A political problem, kina atmareret aleinu levein humot, and the halachic problem of lotosifu. The political problem was resolved by Esther. That problem didn't linger wrong. That problem didn't hang fire. That problem was resolved in a moment. She said, whatever you do, you will be damned if you do, and damned if you don't. So let's do it. This is basically the approach which the state of Israel has right now. What is the use of trying to choose? You are damned both ways. You have no choice since you have no option. So do the right thing. The right thing is that if a miracle happened and the community was saved, then you celebrate it. And that's very powerful thinking. And in the context of contemporary Israel, it's very right-wing thinking. The minute we start making the cheshbonot, what Clinton's going to say, and then what Mady Albright is going to say, and what Kissinger is going to say, and what that Mishumid, the new ambassador who's coming back, the Australian, what's his name? Indik, Martin Indik, that Mishumit went and ate Basa V'chala Bifneyam V'yeda when they dedicated the new McDonald's in Jerusalem. You understand what I'm saying? I have to be overwhelmed by that Mishumit. We have to do what's right, and that's what the Rebbe is saying. All right, this is quite politically right-wing within the context of today. But remember, the Rebbe said this before the Yom Kippur War. This was said during the War of Attrition. And it could be, I say this in my introduction to the Rebbe, that anything I quote from him in the book, two-thirds of the volumes are totally quotes, you have to know when he said it, the time, the place, the context. So this you have to place during the War of Attrition. It may or may not have applicability today. I never want to be a fool and be svasvat medovavat bekeva, the Rav is not here. And who knows what his opinion would be. There's so many different topics. People say, what would he hold today? What would he hold today? Who knows what he would hold today? Today you have 250,000 Jews living in Yehuda v'Shomron. It could very well be his opinion today would be very different than it was in 1974 or 1975. You talk about synagogue council today. Today you have Reform rabbis who are lesbians, females, humanists, who don't believe in God, and in addition, chachazaniyot. So it could very well be that he wouldn't believe in synagogue council today. You understand? It's very dangerous to take a viewpoint circa 1956 and try to say what the Rav would say 60 years later. It's not right, it's unfair, it's not scholarly, and it's not intellectually honest. But this is what he held at this moment in time. The halachic problem was much more serious. Esther could solve the political problem because she knew the mood and disposition of the Persian aristocratic class. She knew the way they related to the Jews. She moved among the aristocrats. So that she could solve. It was a political problem. She was in the palace. Mordechai was the prime minister. They knew that their attitude to the Jews was still negative. And here the Rav says something amazing. Listen to these words. This is very interesting. That the fact that a Jewish individual rises to power does not change the destiny of the Jews. It's amazing. Never say anti-Semitism in a certain government is impossible because so many Jews are prominent in the government. It means nothing. Mordechai was prominent in the government, and still Esther said, they hate us anyway. Go ahead and do what you deem necessary. This was the answer to the political problem. And let me tell you in parentheses, can you give me a magnificent example that just surfaced all the more when tapes were heard? Go ahead. Nixon and Kissinger. Here's Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State. The Jew that reaches the highest position in a secular non-Jewish world since Yosef HaTzadik was the viceroy to Paro. And with it all, his Nixon is cursing out the Jews, maledicting the Jews. The only thing, you know, I'll be malamed zchut Nixon. It's like I have to catch myself not to say Schwarzer. Schwarzer is not a nice term. When I grew up, everyone goes, what's wrong with a Schwarzer? A black man can be as nice as a white man, as decent as a white man. All right. True, many of them are murderers, drug addicts, drug pushers, wife beaters. But percentage-wise today, take a look in a beautiful kibbutz. Another murder, drugs. Take a look at the kibbutz movement in Israel. It's a bunch of schwarzes. That's all I can tell you. A bunch of the leftist kibbutzim is one big group of schwarzes. So I have to bite my tongue to say Afro-Americans. Afro-Americans is much nicer, much more dignified, you understand? And why should it be pejorative? We're Jews, we know what it means to be hated. So you have to speak properly. So it could be a Malamed Zchut Nixon that sometimes Goyim just have these anti-Semitic statements. They don't even mean it. It's just part of their vocabulary. You understand what I'm saying? It's like a Jew saying Schwarzer, you don't mean anything bad, but all right, that's your attitude. That's the way you were brought up. It could be. No, I'm serious. Could be a Malamed Zchut Nixon because it's impossible to understand his Secretary of State, the man that saves his life, the man that guides him, the man that he prayed with. You know, remember Nixon gets down on his knees, I think. Kissinger gets down on his knees. Who knows what went on? The miracle they didn't bring in a crucifix. But the man that saved his life, and at the same moment, he's maledicting the Jews. Malamed Zchut, put that in parentheses. But nevertheless, what the Rav said is so powerful, so insightful. A Jew can rise to prominence. A Jew can rise to an important position. And with it all, the Jew is still not accepted. The Jew is still hated. The Jew is still pushed aside. It's a fabulous concept. Okay, but the political problem is solved. All right, now we come to the heart of today's shiur. This is a meridic part of the shiur. What you have here is fabulous divrei Torah. That's mamash la'amita shel halacha. But what about the halachic problem? This offered tremendous difficulties. The solution, the Rav said, was apparently that to be thankful to God is a mitzvah from the Torah. Any nes that takes place, a man is saved. God restores his grace upon him, protected him, shielded him, gave him prosperity, abundance. If man is happy, he is obligated to thank God for his happiness. Thankfulness and gratitude is a basic commandment in the Torah. It is a mitzvah taseh. How do we know this? Rabbeinu Sanjigon, Emunat V'dayot. Rabbeinu Bachya Hadayan, Chavat HaLevavot. Both of them deal with gratitude, Hakarat HaTov. Rabbeinu Bachya makes the point that gratitude is the basis, the wellspring of religious experience. That our entire Hakarat HaTov, our entire feeling, our entire acknowledgement of God, our relationship with God, is based upon Hakarat HaTov, creating us, giving us a beautiful world, a beautiful life, everything He's given to us. But, all right, these are philosophic works. Where do you find it in the Torah? And of course, the Rav comes back. Those of you who heard my shiur on Pesach, the Rav comes back. It's an explicit concept in the Torah, the mitzvah of Havat Bikurim. What do we do when we read Bring Bikurim? You have to read the Pasha of Arami Oved Avi, the Vidui Bikurim. What is the whole Vidui Bikurim about? How do you summarize it? Hakarat HaTov. God brought us, gave us the land, sustained us. We have this harvest that we're able to bring beautiful Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. The whole Pasha is Hakarat HaTov. The Sefer Chinuch learns that there are two mitzvot involved. One is to bring Bikurim, the other is Likrot Aleihem. Not enough to bring, but to read the Hakarat HaTov, Sefer Chinuch, Pasha Ki Tisavo, Mitzvah Tav Reish Vav, and I'm quoting, Sefer Chinuch, Pasha Ki Tivo, Tak Ki Tavo, Mitzvah Tav Reish Vav, Shen Etz Taveinu Bahavienu HaBikurim LeMikdash. Number one, bring it to the Beit HaMikdash. Number two, Likrot Aleihem HaKtuvim Elu HaNiskarim BePasha Zu. That you have to read that Pasha. Pasha Bikurim, an expression of gratitude. Of course, it has its technical halachic details. You have to recite the Pasha the way it is written. Kiktava. Nevertheless, it is basically, Hakarat HaTov, the Rebbe Chavav, Pasuk Yud, Vata, Hinei, Heveti, Et Reshet, Pri Adama, Shatata, Li, Hashem. Vihinachto, Lifnei, Hashem, Elokecha. Vihishtachaveta, Lifnei, Hashem, Elokecha. Vihishtachaveta, what does bowing represent? Hakarat HaTov, you're thanking someone, right? When you meet a Rebbe, what do? Svadim, what do they do when they meet a Rebbe? Kiss the Rebbe's hand. That's a Hakarat HaTov. That's a modern expression. Vishtachaveta. Whenever I met a Rebbe of mine, and today unfortunately I only have two Rebbeim who are alive, but I just saw Rav Michal Katz in June, and he's frail and he's older, and I embraced him, I kissed him. It's my first Rebbe. That's a Hakarat HaTov. You don't know. How many of you studied with Rav Michal Katz here? You don't know, when I came to the yeshiva in 1951, I was a young little kid. What did I know outside of baseball? Come on, let's be honest. Baseball I knew, that I will admit. But outside of baseball, what did I know? 51, think back. And he was a young man, he was a newlywed, and he was Makarabas and took us into his home and his wife Hindi. And you understand, and a wonderful Rebbe. He's my Rebbe for 2 years, my first 2 years in the yeshiva, 51 through 53. So that's Hakarat HaTov, Vihishtachavita. The Chinuch learns as he gives, you know, the way the Chinuch works when he explains the mitzvah, he gives the time for the mitzvah. I'm quoting, Al Kain Behetiv, Eilav Hashem Barachu, Labriyut Uberchu, Al Tov Yetat Matol, Asot Peirot, Vizachal Viam, the Beit Alokainu, Ra'uilo Laureli Bo, Bedivre Piv Lachshov, Ka Koligelav, Meet Adon Halam. V'yesaper chazdov yitbarach aleinu v'alkol am Yisrael derech klal. And wow, this is a fabulous, fabulous concept. God was so kind to you, took you out, brought you here, gave you a good land. You worked the land, you had ample rain. You understand what's involved, the farmer. Think for a moment. Today, none of you are farmers. Some of you are in law and investments, doctors. Think what's involved. You do a successful operation. You make a successful investment. You defend someone successfully. Hakarat HaTov. And for you, and what about Klal Yisrael? There's the individual, there's the Klal. Remember, we always move with that dialectical tension that we can sit here in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Lamb was absolutely right when he said to the Balabatan, that famous talk about the cave, we're sitting in a cave here. You have no worries whatsoever. Food, clothes. All you have to do is learn Torah. You don't realize how lucky you were. When I was your age, I had to support myself already. I was married. There was no kollel. By the age of 21, you were finished. The yeshiva, there was no kollel. You want to learn for smicha? All right, they didn't charge tuition, only a registration fee, which was very nominal, but you had to support yourself. Take a look how much a karat tov you have to have. We're here, we're learning. Shayurim, Rebbeim, people who care about you, an entire office staff. It's unbelievable. And at the end, you wind up, you have smicha, you have the right to paskin, you know how to learn, you've developed, you can stay a year or two or three, and you can come back, and no one charges you. This is not like Hillel HaZaken, where he had to go up to the roof, he couldn't go into the cave, he had to freeze on top of the roof. I tell you, I don't agree with Avalan on many things. You know, I gave a fabulous analysis of why Rabbi Lamb is different than Rabbi Belkin and Rabbi Revel, and why there's so much opposition to Rabbi Lamb outside the yeshiva or within, but outside. And I don't know where I stand is unimportant, but I analyzed it very, very right to the, because I know it historically. I've lived with Rabbi Belkin. I lived physically with Rabbi Revel. I lived spiritually. And with Rabbi Lamb, I've lived it, so I understand what the yeshiva. But you can debate with the man or dialogue where there's reason to. But on that talk on the cave, he was totally on base, totally online. And never, he had so much aggravation from it with Rabbi Kahn, and then after it's Rabbi Yitzvei. And everyone forgot that Rabbi Yitzvei, I had the year tape of Rabbi Yitzvei. In the same breath that he put Rabbi Lamb into Chayrim, as if to speak, he put the value, what's it called? Eish HaTorah into Chayrim. He ripped the heck out of Rabbi Weinberg. But everyone forgot the Eish HaTorah bit, you understand? That got lost. But what he said about Rabbi Lamb, that became hot news all over the world. But you have to have a Hakarat HaTov. This is a cave we're in. Thank God. The heat is controlled. The air conditioning is controlled. The food is controlled. You have no worries, no cares. If you have to go to a funeral, Olein, like we had to go on Som Gedalia, the yeshiva hired a bus. But just think what it would be like if we had to go individually to give Rabbi Chalap the kavod and to give Mrs. Chalap the kornel of racha, the yikud the shichri, yikud the chai, the gemilat chesed, the halvoya tamed. And this is what the Rav says. This is the mitzvah of vidui bikurim. But more than that, the Rav says, do we have an entire pasha in the Torah where this is explicitly stated? In other words, here by vidui bikurim, we're inferring it. We're taking the sefer chinuch. We're inferring it. Do we have an entire pasha? And the Rav says, yes, pasha dekev. The varim chet. Psukim Yud Aleph to Yud Chet, He Shemelecha Pentrishkach Et Hashem Elokecha Levilti Shema Mitzvotav Umishpatav Chukatav Ashenochi Mitzavach Hayom Pentochal V'Sovata Ubatim Tovim Tivne V'Yashavta Ubekarcha V'Tzoncha Yirbuyun V'Kesev V'Zav Yebelecha V'chol Asher Lecha Yibeh V'Rom Levavacha V'Shachachta T'Shem Elokecha HaMotziacha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Mi'Beit Avadim V'Yamata Belvavecha Kochi V'Otzem Yadi Asa Li Et HaChayel Hazeh V'Zachata T'Shem Elokecha Ki Hu HaNotein Lecha Koach L'Asot Chayel. And what does V'Zachata T'Shem Elokecha mean? To gratitude to God. And I cannot tell you how important this pasha is. You know how many young men I've seen and taught like you. You know how many young men sit in our cave. You know how many young men sit in a more Haredi cave. Do you know how many young men, when they hit the age of 40, take the whole Torah and just throw it away? Throw it away. Successful. There's a guy in the kollel, his first cousin, married the most prominent all-time Yishuv HaYashan Talmud Chacham family. what we call a black hat. I can't say what you call, because many of you wear black hats, but you're not black. But in Israel, someone who wears a black hat, it represents a different lifestyle than the lifestyle you lead. A black hat, everything. And this goes back almost 20 years already. And I was so impressed. It's my daughter's friend, and I know her father from yeshiva. And my daughter tells me, and there must be four or five children today, my daughter tells me they're getting divorced. I said, Tana, what happened? You'd rather not know, Abba. What happened? What happened? The whole religion. It's a big shot. He made money. It's bigger than God. You ever hear that expression? He's 40 years of age, 45 years of age. He hasn't been ill a day in his life. He's going to live forever. Harnof, student of mine, Sadeket, Machon Gold. 8, 9 children. It's all over. Just got to get. Te Pasa. Same story. Why you grad? Big shot. Successful. All gone. Had a student in Machon Gold. She's dead. Lo aleinu. So many students I've seen go already. It hurts, it hurts, it hurts. Marries a YU guy. Black cat. Big Talmud Chacham. Talmud of the Rav. 2 children. I meet her in Israel. 10 years later. Divorced. What happened? Became a psychologist. Religion is the opium of the masses. People have psychological deficiencies, have to feel there's a supreme authority, have to feel comfort in life. It's a crutch. A healthy, modern individual doesn't need a crutch. Tossed it all out the window. I'm a nuvu shebet menuvalim. I'll tell you about this girl. I'll tell you one thing. It should be a schut for memory. I was very fond of her. She was a Swedish guy. Is Reuven in the class? Anyone know if he's in the class? Tell him to miss a shiur like this. It's sad. It's sad. It's mamish. It's a slap in the Rav's face. Pshutoka mashmo. Judah Dadek. I have it, Judah. I'll talk about it at the end. Matt Brenner. Jacob Idomlansky. What are you hiding for, Jacob? I want to be able to see you. Please, sit next to George and don't give me excuses. Mordechai Kaplan. Mordechai, that name will have to do something with it. It absolutely frightens me. You know, I told you, I gave him a lift in my car, my original car. When I sold the car, I benched Goimel because I always felt the tumma in the car. And I couldn't afford to sell. I was very poor then. I drove it for 17 years. Barry Goldfisher. Barry, I love you. You're great. George Roth. Ellie Blaustein. Ellie, you owe me for yesterday. Just remember, I changed the whole shear because I saw already what was going on. And that was just, I scratched the surface. Seth Kleinman. Adam Starr. Shmuel Halik. What do you mean he's gone? It's a shame. Hanoch Davidman. Avi Schneider. Is there anyone in this room whose name I did not call? Are you fellas in the class or you're sightseers? No. Only give me your names if you're in the class. My mind can only take a limited number of names, and if you're going to get credit, you have to be here. And if you care for the Rev, you have to be here. Name. You were here before. Avi Heller. Now I have to learn your face. Yes. Spelled T. ZVI, got it? ENGEL. And you're not related to the Krakow Rav. No. Take the relationship and just say, prove the opposite. Okay? And this is what Hakara Tov means. And this is humility. And these are Maisim B'chol Yom. That it, I'll tell you, that Pasha is so overwhelming because that's the way a human being is. Excuse me? What story is in the middle of? So I'll tell you, the Swiss girl, Zichrona Levracha, may she rest in peace, when she told me what her husband did to her, I started to curse him out. It was Friday night walking. We were walking back from the Kotel together. And she said to me, Rebbe, I want you to know, I don't want you to curse him out. I said, what? That Oisvaf? That Trumpenik? That spiritual degenerate? That Wayu Musmach? Who equals some of the Lakewood Musmachim I know? And she said to me, Rebbe, I still love him. And you should know, Rebbe, I didn't want to leave him. But I couldn't see myself remaining married to a Machalos Shabbos. I have such respect that she should be a good debater for us. Think of that answer. And whenever I met her, and we interacted over the years, because she was very friendly with my close friend, with Tzvi Grona, she never said a bad word about him. I still love him. Imagine the Nisoyon to give up life, give up love, give up the husband, left America. By the way, I have to give him credit. He didn't stand in the way of the kids going in Aliyah. You understand, the father has the right to block a kid under 18. They're terrible problems that I can tell you some of my students have had. He let them go. He gave them permission, legal permission. So you see, he had a schut. But don't take for granted. You remember these words. Mordechai, let them imprint upon you. When Baruch Hashem, you're successful and you're on top of the world in your 40s. In my age, it's a little different. My age, you're not a fool anymore. I'm half alive. You understand what I'm saying? I'm a third alive. Two-thirds, three-quarters of the world I know is gone. It's dead. It's only in my memory. See what the Rav has to say about this. I have it in my book. So at my age, the Rav is the Rav. I hit the jackpot. You're absolutely right. Big deal. The pain of despair is a lot deeper than the sweetness of success. Baruch Hashem, I hit the jackpot. I hit the jackpot now. Happy, happy. Thankful, 1,000,000%. Humbled, 1,000,000%. However, when you're 40 and you hit the jackpot, you're bigger than God. That's the Pasha in the Torah. That's Hakarat HaTov. And this is why a miracle of Nes Purim, a miracle of such proportions, Avi, engenders the obligation of establishing a chag of Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Perhaps we could have been Yotzei the Hodah, the Chiyuv, by reciting the psalm we say in Hallel. Take a psalm, e.g., for instance, Hodol Hashem Kitov, Kili Olam Chasto, Min HaMeitzah Karatika, Anani B'mechavka. Could be. We would have been behind the mitzvah. However, the Chachamim introduced a certain technique, a certain medium by which I achieved the Kiyum HaMitzvah. They introduced Tzvi Engel, the Kriyat HaMegillah, instead of Hallel. However, when I do read the Megillah, it is a Kiyum D'Oraita. You understand what the Rav is saying here? Reading the Megillah, what am I, an idiot? A Kiyum D'Oraita? How can I talk such foolish language? There was no Purim at the time of Matan Torah. There was no Mordechai. There was no Esther. But it's a Kiyum of Hodah. Hakarat HaTov. This is what the Chachamim said. Megillah Yudalit Amar Aleph. Uma me'avdut l'cheirot amrinim shira. Mimita l'chayim. Lo kol shekein. May Avdut L'Cheirat, the Torah required gratitude. Hallel and Pesach is gratitude. Sipu Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Haggadah, is basically gratitude. It is a mitzvah which expresses gratitude and thanksgiving. Take the second half of the Seder. What do you have if not the second half of Hallel HaMitzri? Hallel HaGadol. If so, Mimita L'Chaim, Lo Kol Shekein. If you have Hallel, Kriyat Haggadah, the Hallel HaMitzri, Hallel HaGadol, Leil HaSeda. If that is the case, Mimita L'Chaim, it means that Chachamim have arrived at a conclusion, have introduced certain mitzvot which serve just as a media for the fulfillment of the commandment which was formulated by the Torah. So this is the answer that Chazal gave to the halachic question. Purim is not an additional holiday. It is only the technique which was new. The Maisa mitzvah, the performance of the mitzvah, is the addition. The requirement is midrabanan. I cannot say halal on Purim, since the Chachamim required Kriyat HaMegillah. However, the Kriyat HaMegillah, the technique, the Chachamim's requirement, is a fulfillment of Hakarat HaTov, the Oraita. It is just like Halel on Pesach. Just like Halel on Leil HaSeder. When I do read the Megillah, I also achieve a Kiyam de Oraita of Hakarat HaTov. This is exactly how this halachic problem was solved. Now, the Rav is going to say something amazing now. But I just want to say something in parentheses. This is something I've spoken about over the years, and this is the point to say it right here in parentheses. By the way, the Rav said this. It's not my own, but I'm just saying it here. And the Rav didn't say it here. Baruch Atah Melech Hashem. Mordechai, Yom Atzmut. We suffer because we lack a technique to give the day uniqueness. You understand what I'm saying? This is the heart. When you hear stories that the Rav was angry with Yom Atzmut, you're not hearing the whole story. The Rav was angry with the way the Bnei Akiva Minyan and why you were celebrating it. And he had every right to be angry. We can't introduce a Kriyat HaTorah on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. We can't introduce a Kriyat of a Haftorah on a Tuesday or Wednesday. Or a Monday and Thursday. But we lack. How do we celebrate Yom Atzmut? Saying Hallel evidently is not sufficient. The people don't. It doesn't give uniqueness to the day. We say Hallel Rosh Chodesh. Say Hallel many times during the year. And this is why we have all these problems. If you take some of the Sidurim for Yom Atzmut, they have Kabbalat Shabbos with Lachadodi and Migdash Melech. And they have Yom Kippur with Shema Yisrael and Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim. It's beautiful. But it doesn't give the day uniqueness. And we lack. Having a Mongol, although my children are convinced that I'm not a good Jew, because last year I went to a Mongol on Yom Atzmut. It was the first time in many years my grandchildren invited me. I had no choice, but I mean, having a Mongol, I don't think that's a kiyum. A barbecue. That's the word. I think it's a French word. In Israel, it's called a Mongol. Having a barbecue, you say barbecue here, they'll arrest you for desecration of airspace. No one knows what you're talking about. Jivalami Judah, but a Mongol, they know what you're talking about. Tzvi, having a Mongol, what kind of kiyum is this? You understand? All right, you can eat meat, you can make a party, you can do this, that, but we lack. We don't have, see, Chanukah, Chazal had that ability. Chanukah, you have Hadlakat HaNerut. Purim, you have Kriyat HaMegillah. What can we have to give Yom Atzmut uniqueness? I don't know. I've thought about this problem for decades, and I don't have a good answer. Yes, Sri.
I'm just curious, it's difficult, obviously, in retrospect, to sort of also play armchair quarterback and wonder about these things, but I'm aware that the Rav was opposed to the ritual changes.
Right.
And I know that at the same time, there were other people who, since then, have made more wild statements, the thing that they said, in making other days, which today are very well accepted, as per, let's say, the Yom Shalat commemoration, which...
No, No. Sit, before you go further, just relax. Yom HaShoah has nothing to do with what we're talking about, because Yom HaShoah, there's no kiyum.
Okay, so say Yom
Atzmut. Yeah, Yom Atzmut is the problem. First of all, the Rav was living in Boston. He's not living here. So he told them to say Hallel. That's what he told them. I have it on tape. He said, I can understand you want to say Hallel. To say Hallel. Hallel is the king of the Gemara and Pesachim. Kuf Tetvav, Kuf Yudalib. Absolutely. Without a bracha. I can say with a bracha. There's not a formal takanot. You heard what I said in class yesterday. The boys heard me yesterday. Ribbono shel Olam, we have 27 Chavrei Knesset that supposedly represent religious parties. Each one hates the other one more than they hate Meot Sidung. And the 17 Shas people hate each other more than they hate the Maftal. And the Sebe Zachwit are good. Come on, cut it out. We don't have a central authority. But you want to say Hallel? Say Hallel. That makes sense. But I'm saying something else. We need more than Hallel. But your question, why didn't the Rav institute more than Hallel, has no place. The Rav didn't live here. He was not part of the scene here. He lived in Boston. It's hard for him to understand what goes on here when a whole nation celebrates Yom HaTzmut. You understand what I'm saying? When the country closes down. And they're looking, the religious Jew was looking for expression. The irreligious Jew, for him, he doesn't need a religious expression. Whatever Yom HaTzmut means to him, it means to him. Fine. There'll be a day when they'll abolish Yom HaTzmut here. There's no doubt about it. Embarrasses the Arabs. How can we celebrate our independence if they had their Nakba? Am I pronouncing it right? What's the word they use? Their tragedy, their Holocaust. It'll happen soon enough in the Knesset. It'll be introduced. Barak's grandchildren will not celebrate Yom HaTzmut, you can believe me. But my grandchildren do. So the question remains, but to throw that on the Rav is not fair, because it's like throwing on me, a lahavdil between me and my Rebbe, but you're going to come to me with a taina because I didn't express an opinion at what happened in Queens with the women's prayer group? I'm living here, I'm not living there. You understand what I'm saying? It's you have to understand, the Rav was not a magician. He lived in Boston, he functioned there. If you have this, he understood what was going on in Israel, but ain't a dime shmir kriya. You understand what I'm saying? He could understand through Hatzofa, through Haaretz. They sent it to him. I think he also got Marav. I know at least in the 70s he got Marav as well. It was sent to him from Israel. So he knew what was going on. But there's a big difference when you live here, and this is a problem. And this is where Chazal was so insightful. They gave us a Purim with a Megillat Esther. The Kiyam is the Oraita, Hakarat HaTov. The technique is the Rabbanan. Okay. It is very interesting. Seth, when I say that, the Rav said it. You understand? I want you to feel. You'll see in my book, it says it is very interesting. So Adam will say, what do you need these four extra words for? It is very interesting. Leave it out. Adam, for you, I could have left it out. But for those who knew the Rav, they cry. When Rabbi Holzer calls me twice already, keeps me on the phone 2 hours crying and crying and crying, I have hit a home run with the bases loaded. For you, it'll only be a single. But for Manny Holzer, it's over the fence with three on, two down, the bottom of the ninth, and it now turned into a 4-3 victory. Okay? I don't forget to round the bases, you understand what I'm saying? With the more runs today, you have a ball game, a home run turns into a single. Ugh, Matt, you better burn them out, because the world in which we're living, these guys are so dumb, it's a miracle they remember which way to run to first. It is very interesting. This is why the Rambam, look what the Rav says. See, you'll see a Goynish cup, you'll see a Goynish cup at work. Avi, the Rambam allowed Hilchat Megillah to precede Hilchat Chanukah. Look in. Hilchat Megillah, Perek Aleph, Perek Bet. Then Hilchat Chanukah is a continuation, Perek Gimel, and then Perek Daled. Mordechai, why are they not one unit? And why does Purim precede Chanukah? Why that choice? Of course, you will tell me that historically Purim preceded Chanukah. I am not a historian. I am a Malamed. Amalamed looks at the calendar. On the calendar, Chanukah precedes Purim. You want me to strengthen my question, the Rav said? You understand? Yes, I'm saying, Mordechai. No, you tell him historically, Purim. What have to do with historically? Look on the calendar. Chanukah is before Purim. In the Shulchan Aruch, which comes first? Hilchat Chanukah precede Hilchat Purim. Absolutely. Hilchat Chanukah, a Tafresh Ayin to Tafresh Pehei. Hilchat Megillah, Tafresh Pehvav through Tafresh Tzadi Zayin. The Shulchan Aruch followed the Jewish calendar in setting his order, not the theories of historians. Why didn't the Rambam do likewise? I believe, the Rav said, the Rambam utilized this order because without Purim, there would be no Chanukah. On Chanukah, they did not encounter any problem. They did not have to deal with the Lo Tosifu. They already had a precedent, the Megillah. There was nothing to worry about. There was no critique. There was no machlokes. There was no need for pilpul. Judah, the precedent was there. Jacob, we have Kriyat Megillah. The lotosifu has been solved. And that's why Purim must precede Hanukkah. The Rambam says this openly. Hilchat Hanukkah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Gimel, V'yamim Elu, Hein Hanikrayim Hanukkah, V'hein, Asurin Behesped, V'tainit, Kimei HaPurim, V'hadlakat HaNeirat B'hem Mitzvah Midivrei Sofrim, T'kriyat Megillah. Why did the Rambam have to add these words? Ki mei purim, ki kriyat megillah. Did it ever say, did the Rambam ever paskin, that we have a mitzvah of matzah like a mitzvah of lulav? Look into Hilchat Chametz u'Matzah. What kind of language is this? Ki mei purim, ki kriyat megillah. Every other mitzvah tasei stands on its own. What's the interconnection? What's the intrinsic point that pulls these together? The answer is that Megillah is the prototype that made the establishment of Hanukkah possible. Hadlakat Neirot is a mitzvah, but the idea and the kiyum lying at the root of the mitzvah is gratitude. And this is the same gratitude that paved the way, because it enabled us to introduce Kriyat HaMegillah. The Rambam says this openly. Hilchat Chanukah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Gimel, Matlikim Mehem Neirat Yerei Apitchei Habatim, the Chol Laila V'Laila, Mishmonet HaLailot, Laharot U'Legalot HaNeis. And what does it mean? To manifest, demonstrate, and publicize the Neis. Once again, it is Hakarat HaTov. Pesume Nisa is Hakarat HaTov. Look what God did for us. Look what God vouchsafed us. Look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. Gratitude is the gist of the mitzvah. You know what the gist means? Gesture. It's the gesture involved. There's a gist and a gist. Gratitude is the gist of the mitzvah. While the technique of the mitzvah must meet certain requirements, this is exactly how they resolved Purim. In Purim, they had no additional mitzvah of rabbinic origins. You only had what we call gezerot. In Purim, there was no additional mitzvah. And they were overwhelmed. Chazal were tortured. They didn't want to give in testa right away. They couldn't understand how they could add on. And they resolved it by coming to the conclusion that neither a writer, they were adding nothing. The kiyum was Hakarat HaTov. It was only a display, how we displayed Hakarat HaTov. The technique was new. The kiyum was the writer. And that's what gave us the ability to institute Purim. And that's why Hanukkah could go so sweetly without machloket. The precedent was there. Hilchat Purim, Hilchat Megillah, have to come first. Gezerat Asiyagim. Of course, we have the Kabbalah from Anshei Knesset HaGadola, Pirkei Avot, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, Asu Siyag LaTorah. Build a fence around the Torah. Make a hedge around the law. This is, whenever you deal with it, and here the Rav Gag Benin goes into a whole explanation of Gezerah. Whenever you deal with an Gezerah, it is not an addition. It is rather an expansion of an existing law, of the Deoraita law. For instance, I will give you an example. Take Shabbos. The Lamatat Malachat have been forgiven. However, we now include Muktzah. All the Shvutim. This is only an extension. For instance, me, the writer is forbidden to write two letters. The rabbis forbade even to write one letter. It is not a new concept, but rather that the concept of malacha has been expanded rabbinically, to various deeds and performances which have not been included in the original table of malacha from which the person was enjoined. Chazal have told us, Moed Katan, Daf Hei Omer Aleph, based upon the Pasuk in Vayikra Yudchet, Pasuk Lamed, Ushamatem et mitzvah ki keep God to my heritage. Asum is merished l'mishmati. Chazal encourage us, make a fence, be extra cautious, be very careful. That's what Gezerah Tah. That they knew from before. They knew before the miracle of Shushan happened. They knew that Siyagim or Gezerah may be introduced. Gezerah or Siyagim is not an extraneous addition. It is not a foreign commanded added to the system of Tayag Mitzvot. It is rather an extension or an enlargement. Whenever you come to Gezerah, they fall into that category. We spoke about Shabbat, Shniyot LaRayat. What is Shniyot LaRayat? All the additional Arayat. It's just a fence around the Torah laws. That's why it's called Shniyot. It's an addition. You're doubling it. You're multiplying it. You're adding to the category of forbidden women. But it's a din de Rabbanan. It's a siyak. It's a gezerah. But it's not an additional concept. Kriyat HaTorah. How are you allowed to read the Torah? Shabbos, Monday, Tuesday. Kriyat HaTorah is simply an extension of the mitzvah d'oraita of Talmud Torah. By the way, Kriyat HaTorah is not a gezerah, it's a takana. See, the Rafi is talking gezerah, but basically gezerah and takana are the same concept. And he says it's an extension. When I introduce that the Torah should be read b'tzibur, this is nothing new. Actually, when I do read the Kriyat HaTorah on Monday, Thursday, and Saturday, I simply fulfill a mitzvah that's safe in the Torah of Talmud Torah. Not only the gist of the mitzvah, the idea of the mitzvah are the oraita, but even the technique is basically the oraita. See, everything here, it's Kriyat HaTorah. Kriyat HaTorah is Talmud Torah. Shlomo HaMelech, the Rav quotes the Gemara Ne'ruvin. Gemara Ne'ruvin, Daf Chafala from Itbed. B'shah Shatikin Shlomo, a Ruvin, Ratila Jadayim, Yotza Batkol, V'yamra, B'ni, Imchacham Libcha, Yismach Libi Gamani. That God was so happy when Shlomo HaMelech introduced Natila Jadayim. But what is Natila Jadayim? Again, it's a siyak to the Torah, tumat yadayim. If your hands are tamei, you make the produce tamei. By washing the hands, you can no longer make the produce tamei. As a matter of fact, Shlomo only introduced it because of the problem of truma. A Reuven, when he introduced the concept of it said Tikkun Shlomo, a Reuven, what does a Reuven mean? It's a din deoraita that if you cannot carry from Rishut HaYachad to another Rishut HaYachad, you will not carry from Rishut HaYachad to Rishut HaRabim, or vice versa. You follow me? It is just extending the existing law. It is like Dinei Shvut of Shabbat. It's like Shniyot of Arayot. It's an extension of laws that already existed before. It's taking Talmud Torah and broadening when we can do it. But the whole concept is the Oraita. There's nothing new here. Even the technique is not new. But when we come to Purim, this is the first real addition. This is what Chazal said. We had so many Neviyim, so many Neviyot. We never made an addition. And for the first time, we have an addition. And don't forget, and here the Rav is talking about himself as well. And don't forget, Chazal were very careful and extra cautious when it came to a new holiday. Why? Why were they so careful? Why were they so hesitant? Why are we Torah Jews? I said yesterday, in the name of Rabbi Wurzburger, describing the Rav, why did the Rav have a phobia for any new innovation? Well, why? Why are we so cautious? What can be wrong? Oh boy. And the Rav says, you know why Chazal was so cautious? Because of Yeruvim. He was condemned for two things, Yeruvim ben Nevat. Firstly, for setting up the golden calf. And secondly, Hachag Ashebada Melibo. Melachim Aleph, Perek Yud Bet, Pasuk Lamed Bet. Vayas Yeruvim Chag B'chodesh Hashmini b'chamisha asa yom lachodesh, pasuk lamed gimel, vayal al hamizbeach asher asa beveit el, b'chamisha asa yom b'chodesh hashmini b'chodesh asher, badam mi libo, vayashchad livnei Yisrael, vayal al hamizbeach lahatir. He invented a new holiday. Avodah Zarah was not his only sin. He changed the Jewish calendar. He forged a holiday. And out of forging a new holiday, look what happened. Look at the results. Look at the split of the kingdom. Look at the widespread idol worship throughout the kingdom of Yisrael. And therefore, Chazal were extra cautious. Yeruvim ben Nevat was condemned on a par with Avodah Zarah for two terrible crimes. One, introducing idolatry into the Jewish community, the most horrible and heinous crime of all. But just as bad, the Chag HaShabbadam b'libo, inventing a strange holiday that had no basis and no antecedent. And this is why Chazal was so careful. Therefore, when it came to Purim, Esther had a job to do. Chazal did not want to give in to her at first. It is very interesting that the one who argued for the new concept of Purim was Esther. It was not Mordechai. Esther dealt with the political question. That is a fact. That I can understand. That's easy to understand. Esther was the queen. She was in the court. She knew the political scene better than anyone else. But for the halacha question, Mordechai should have stood up and argued with the scholars. Why was it Esther? According to Chazal, Megillat Daf Tet Zayin Amud Bet, Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin. Mordechai was a great Talmid Chacham, Ratzui L'Rov V'Chav. Why should a woman get involved in this halachic debate? Why didn't Mordechai take up the cudgels? Why did he leave it to Esther Hamalka? Esther, Perek Tet, Pasuk Lamed Bet, Umay Mereste Kiyam Divrei HaPurim Eila, V'nichtav V'Seifa. It is Esther who engaged the Chachamim in debate. Esther who engaged them in the argument. It is Maimer Esther and not Maimer Mordechai. Why? If you take the history of Purim the way the Megillah portrays it, it is not the way historians portray it. Historians always claimed that the story never happened. You know, and gentlemen, this is absolutely so. The Rebbe mentioned names. There was a Gass, there was the son of the chief rabbi, the Chacham of the British Jewish community. They always had an organized rabbinate with an Ashkenazic chief rabbi and a Chacham. We're talking, that's his son. I don't want to mention the name. Gaster, but the father was a Yirat Tzaddik. The son wrote an entire volume to prove that Hanukkah and Purim, particularly Purim, never took place. It couldn't happen. The story is just beyond comprehension. It's a Hollywood movie. It's a Hollywood movie. Can't happen. This can't be. Jacob, we only began to understand the story of the Megillah in the 1940s. Haman is a fantastic figure. Our enemy said it's only Jewish imagination that could have projected such an image. How can a person recommend Megillah, Perikimel, Pasuk, Yud Gimel, Ashmid, LaRog, LaBeit, Et Kol Yudim, Binavi, Atzakein, Tafan Hashem, B'Yom Echad? It is impossible. It is inhuman. Many, many, among them, Gretz, Zvi Heinrich Gretz, Zechariah Frankel, could not understand how this could have happened. This was the most maligned and most indicted document, Megillat Esther. How is it possible? This is only human fantasy and human fear. It is only the Jew in Bayit Sheni who saw in every guy a potential murderer. Only such Jews could cook up such a story. We have never come across in human history, not only in Jewish history, such a person. Of course, Hitler came and said, it is possible. It is not only possible, but a reality. This was the main argument that historians used against Megillat Esther. How is it possible? The second argument against the Megillah was that how could there be such a funny figure like Ahasuerus? Matt? Seth? Adam? Gentlemen, do me a favor. Sunday night, 11 o'clock curfew. Asleep. Seth, yesterday you were Grossman. Today you are Kleinman. Don't forget it. I have it right in front of me. Right in front of me. Just relax. I'm finishing up. Give me another minute. I may have to leave you hang here. I'll finish up this point and then we'll let you hang. The second argument was that how could there be such a funny figure? The Rav loved the word funny, by the way. In my book, I had to edit it out because the Professor Ellman felt the word funny, it's too pedantic a word. It's in a book of scholarship, it won't be understood. But the Rav loved it. He loved the word. Such a funny figure. How can you have a guy like Ahasuerus? He signs a decree of edict of extermination of the Jews, men, old women, children, babies, without even asking who they are. All he knew was what Haman told him. Megillah Gimel, Pasuk Chetu, Datayim Shonot, Mikol Ambi, Atatayim Melech Enom Osim, Ume Melech En Shevel Ahani Cham. Ahasuerus asked no questions. He simply declared to Haman, V'ha'am, La'asot Bo, Ketov Be'enecha. Destroy them. Wipe them out. Kill them. Get rid of them. No wonder. When Esther complained to Ahasuerus, what does he declare? Megillah Perek Zayin Pasuk Hey. Mi hu zeh? V'yezeh hu? He suddenly didn't know what's going on. Mi zeh Hashem maluli bo la'asot kein? It was just a small and significant episode. Who was supposed to remember it? So I signed the warrant to kill 6 million Jews. Big deal. The king is busy with so many important matters, he cannot remember all the edicts he signed. Particularly when it called for the wholesale destruction of an entire people. Just forgot about it. So it is a comical figure. Such a comical figure could not have been the head of the Persian Empire. A king must be a warlord. He must know strategies and be a good administrator. How is it possible that Ahasuerus could be the king? Once again, the critic said, only the Jewish sense of humor could come up with such a comic book figure. Then the historian said that Mordechai himself was an assimilationist and anachronistic. The proof is very simple. The name of God is not mentioned in the Megillah. The Megillah is, after all, the only book that speaks about historical events, and the intervention of God is not mentioned. This is the third argument against the Megillah. My dear friends, pray for our well-being. We'll pick up just where we're leaving off. There's not the Shem a week from now. What have we done today? Did a world. First of all, we portrayed the tremendous machloket on the political level. The implications for contemporary life are overwhelming. There's no question that that part of the talk would be viewed in today's terminology as the Divrei Torah of a hawk. If you were to publish it anonymously, people would never guess that it came from the Rav. Of course, the Rav's image today, if Rabbi Melki or Michael can say that he told people he is the true heir to Rabbi Soloveitchik's viewpoints, it's just unbelievable. Here's a guy who never met the Rav in his life, and he's the true heir. But that's the way the ball bounces today. But these words are fabulous. As Yomru Vagoyim, if we're going to get involved with what the Goyim think, none of us would be sitting here. So the political argument, Esther won very quickly. And she made the proper point. It's already in the New York Times. You can't hide it. So let's do what's right. Don't look to the left. Don't look to the right. The halachic argument is much more crucial and much deeper and much more complex. How can you introduce a new holiday? And here, the Chachamim had to deal with the whole understanding, is it a new holiday, isn't it? And the Rav explained, the Kiyum is a kingdom writer, Hakarat HaTov. The technique is new, but the Kiyum is Torah. And if this is the case, they reach the conclusion, you're allowed. In every generation, you may have to be Makar Tova. The Kiyum is a Doraita, but you have to institute a technique that will express the Hakarat HaTov. This explains Kriyat HaMegillah, this explains Purim, and this explains Hanukkah. And the Rav, with his Goynisha cup, explained why the Rambam is medankdek to put Hilchot Megillah before Hilchot Hanukkah, unlike the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch follows the order of the calendar, but the Rambam follows the halachic understanding. And it was only because the problem of Kriyat HaMegillah could be solved that you could so easily and so smoothly have Hanukkah without any machloket and introduce Hadlakat HaNeirot, because the Kiyum there too is a Kiyum Doraita, Hakaret HaTov. It's just the technique of Hadlakat HaNeirot that becomes so important. And then we went into another question. Why did Esther have to take up the cudgels? Why did she have to fight this battle? Where was Mordechai? And we haven't answered this question, but we started to analyze that the Megillah was the most maligned of all the books of the Bible, the biblical critics, the Jewish critics. It couldn't have happened. It can't be. You would never find anyone as cruel as Haman. You could never find anyone as foolish as Ahasuerus. And who dare calls Mordechai a religious Jew? Mordechai is an assimilationist. The name of God is not mentioned. He's happy to be in the king's court. He's happy to move in aristocratic circles. And we'll see more and more attacks upon Megillat Esther. And this is absolutely true. And the Rav says en passant that in passing, the Rav says that only after World War II, then we understood Haman and we recognized he was not a figment of the Jewish imagination. But nevertheless, this is what the detractors of the Megillah said, and we have to pick up at this point next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, and build further. Gentlemen, you have to admit that the Rav, and this is speaking in Boston on a Sunday morning, a lot of this is off the cuff, I have a feeling. He was being asked questions, and it's just on and on and on. He was a Mayim HaMitgaber in everything he touched. And even a lecture like this Sunday morning, the lundus of the technique and the Kiyum Mitzvah, you have here meat for a briska in addition to all the machshava. But we're just scratching the surface. The best is yet to come. And the best of the best is really yet to come. Sunday Be'ezrat Hashem, it's a $12,000 shiur. I get involved in Mamzeret. Those of you that are going to be Torah Jews, learned Jews, those of you that don't want to rebel when you turn 40 and you're on top of the world, I wouldn't miss Sunday shiur for all the money being traded on the New York stock market today, and all the money that changed hands with the Yankee sweep of the first two games, with all the betting and the odds and the great Boston pitching staff with Slick Jet and Tiff Pyre and Dredd. I wouldn't miss next week's shiur for all of that. Now, in addition, I now repeat. I met Judah at the Kotel Friday night, and we spoke about my publications. The first two books are unavailable. I will reprint them, but it's too early yet. I can't interfere with the Be'ezrat Hashem. I can't interfere, believe that. I will reprint them. I can't interfere with the sales of the Rav. The Rav has to now conquer the world, and it's Baruch Hashem. It's in a second printing at this very moment. Within 3 weeks, the first printing sold out, which is beyond comprehension. It's thousands and thousands of sets. First two books are out of print. They went through two editions, but there's nothing I can do right now. These two volumes are my third and fourth volumes. It's Rakaf Aron, Chelik Aleph, Chelik Bet. I dedicated these volumes to Tzedakah. I don't allow them to be sold because we've been able to raise maybe onto $100,000 already. The minute it's sold, you can't raise that money. So it's dedicated to Shvatami, and it's available to my students. Danny Yalker is taking orders. Anyone here who is wealthy and already has a bayit and a cistern and molei kultuv and and is ready to rebel already. He's anyone on that level, please make a donation of 100 shekel a book to Shvatami. It's tax deductible. And if you give it in American friends of Israel, it's tax deductible. Shvatami. If you're from England, English friends, Canadian friends, etc. If you're not wealthy and you're poor yeshiva boy like I was at your age, all I ask is that you cover the cost, which is 50 shekel a book, which is a drop over $10 today. I think the books are well worth it, in my opinion, but you can express your own. I just got a letter from the Dover Universitat Bar Ilan telling me that he never got a greater buy in his life than these two volumes, so Baruch Hashem. That's the books. Danny Yalkut. Next. For those of you who are serious, I don't want to give this out and then find that in the Beis Medrash you threw it around, it costs money to produce. It's all my published writings that are not in books, articles that appeared in scholarly journals. Volume 1 is lighter, Volume 2 is extremely heavy. The scholarship, Baruch Hashem, no one has yet found a major error. This represents 4 decades of publications. You have all my Jewish life articles, Nibin Rashi articles, tradition articles, scholarly journal articles, etc. The Cleves Get is in here. The Ridbaz article, these articles that I won prizes for, they're all in here. The Cholchanan Spector article is in here. There are 3 articles in Hebrew in Volume 2. Otherwise, it's entirely in English. So Volume 1 only has an English side. Volume 2 has both an English and Hebrew side. Yes? The Bernard Weil, Builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy. If you go to YU, you don't know what YU is about. Without reading that book, they shouldn't let you graduate high school, let alone college. They should reprint it and give it a gift to every student. But the world in which we live, Revel is forgotten, YU is forgotten, the cave is forgotten, this is forgotten. We're in the computer world, a hoot about yesterday, we move into tomorrow, we have no humility, we don't know how to bow before God humbly and to thank those that paved the way that we should be sitting here today. Volume 2 is a book. Volume 2 is the Silver Era, which has been called in scholarly journals. Jack has it, he'll show it to you. In a journal in scholarship, to put this into a footnote, you're not allowed to use an adjective in scholarship. It is called the single most excellent volume on the history of Orthodoxy in America. It's the Silvera, Rabbi Eliezer Silva and his generation. It's about the present of Agudat HaRabbanim, but it's much more wide-ranging than Revel, which is limited to yeshiva and yeshiva college. This is the whole era, including post-World War II. I have a chapter in there with my famous chapter. That's the book that Jewish Observer reviewed. And they said, we can't find any fault with Rakefet's scholarship, but we wouldn't agree with his conclusions. I will give any Jewish observer, Agudat Yisrael. Seth, you're still asleep. I'm not a wealthy man, but I'll give anyone 10 shekel if they can show one conclusion I reach in that volume. It's just pure scholarship. Avi, are you related to Hellas that studied in BMT? Are you related to Ira? Yeah. No. If you, I was my student, but beside that, you're not from that hell of fame. That's what I want to know. You're not answering me. No, I'm beside that. Okay, gentlemen, for those of you who are interested and only interested, okay, and Barry is taking orders. It costs nothing. It'll be a Hanukkah gift, but it costs me. You know, it costs want you to produce this. I feel very bad. And very thankful at the same time. I'm thankful that Baruch Hashem, I knew I had a winner, but that I knew I had a winner, you know, I can love the Rav too much, I can love Aaron Rakefet too much, that the winner, no, I'm serious, Adam Karavetz lots. Well, maybe my scholarship was terrible, maybe what I did was horrible. Maybe what I've been doing in the Kollel, these volumes came as a direct result of this room, this class, etc., the last 21, 22 years. Baruch Hashem, the reaction has been fantabulous. So you see me now at the peak of the mountain. This disturbs me, because Eli Babish and Mordechai Kaplan can think, who can be like the Rebbe? He's on the peak, he's this and that, all right. I want you to see me when I was buried underneath the mountain.